We are working our way through the book of Colossians, and now we come to a part that was in their culture also a part of the household, and that was the slaves and the masters. Now, we apply that in a broader sense for our lives here tonight as employees and employees. Employees and employers. There we go. And as we look at this, we'll describe the differences between those two things, but also the similarities, the things that you and I can learn as we are surrendering our hearts to those who really, through God's grace and also God's hand, have put an authority above us. Unless you work for yourself, then there is a word for the master, and you have people that are below you. I've worked in a number of different atmospheres in life. I've worked on farms for farmers, and I've worked in construction. I was framing houses in Challis in the summertime when I was 15 years old, and learning that you get more sunburnt at that elevation than here, and all kinds of things. I've worked for family. I've worked for a cemetery where I worked for 3 years. I worked for the Cablevision company for a period of time as well. And my mom was their stellar salesperson for Cablevision in the Magic Valley. And my mom got me a job. And it was a cool thing for me, a bull rider who wanted to ride more bulls than actually work. And you just got these door hangers, you know, half price for installation on Cablevision. And I would just get a stack about this big, and I would stamp my name on all of them. And then I would just run up and down, you know, sections of town and put these all over the doors. And I would do that maybe an hour or two a day. And then they would call, and I would get the sales from those things and then ride bulls the rest of the time. So it was really a sweet deal for a bull rider until a new manager moved into town. And the new manager had a different philosophy than a bull rider's version of salesmanship. That is, every door that I hung one of those tags on, he wanted me to knock on that door, talk to that person, and then if they wanted cable, then I had to go for the hard sell and get them to have Showtime and, you know, HBO and the different things. Now, I automatically had a problem because I actually lived in a rural area where I did not have cable vision personally. And so he said, well, tell them about the latest programs you've been watching. It. I haven't been watching any. I said, we have one channel in the Magic Valley. If you don't have Cablevision, it's Channel 11. That's just the way it is. Big city, Idaho. He says, you don't have Cablevision, and you're working for me as a salesman? I said, well, they never said it was a prerequisite before you came. And he's like, well, how can you sell the product if you don't know the product? I said, I don't know. I'm doing pretty well. I think you should be doing better. And I want you on every doorstep to knock on that door, go for the hard sale, get your foot in the door. If they want basic cable, then I want you to go for the premium channels and this and that. And then when you leave that doorstep, I want you to document the exact conversation. Now, for a bull rider that was hanging about 200 door hangers a day in about an hour and a half, to actually go door to door and actually be a salesman, I realized I was out of my element. First of all, I personally don't like pushy salesmen. So to be one was against my nature. But I realized quite quickly that I could either go with the new manager's program or I could find another job. That as things worked out, it worked out kind of good for me. About the time I was having the crisis, a bull helped me out and kicked me in the leg, and I was in a body cast for 6 weeks. So that kind of took the pressure off for about 6 weeks, okay? And all my sales from all my door hangers kept coming in. So I was still making money while I was laid up in a body cast. But I realized, even not being that mature, but I was a young Christian, that it wasn't my role to change the manager's mind. He had the authority. He was the new guy in the office, even though I'd been working there about 9 months before he came along. I realized that I needed to go either with his program or I needed to go find something else to do. When you look at the roles that are now going to be given in God's word for the workplace, you and I, as Americans, generally speaking, I know everybody's got different schedules, but generally speaking, your day is split up in thirds. About a third of your day you work, 8 hours a day. About a third of the day you sleep, about 8 hours a day. And about a third of the day, 8 hours, is yours, leisure time or whatever other things you're doing. And so if we're going to spend 8 hours to 12 hours, I know the site workers that get on the bus at O-Dark 30 and go out to, you know, the site with their pillow in hand, and then they come back when it's dark. I mean, you guys, man, my hat's off to you. It's a long haul when you're working those 10-hour shifts, but by the time it's all done, it's like 12 hours out there and back. Think about how much time that you are there, how many people you're around, and the kind of witness that you personally can be for Jesus. If your Christianity and my Christianity does not begin to get into the fiber of every area and dynamic of my life, there's something wrong. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want you to take your Bible and go preaching, you know, during work time tomorrow. There's your witness, your work ethic is going to speak volumes. And if you have freedom at break time or you have freedom at lunchtime, those different things, or there's Bible studies that I know go on out at the site at lunchtimes and various things, much to a lot of people's chagrin, they go on. But you want to be effective for the Lord. And I think that I have probably shared the Lord when it comes to a one-on-one experience in life more in the place of occupation of work than any single area of my life since I've become a Christian. Now, that is with the exception of ministry, because people come in and, you know, you get appointments all the time. But I mean, when you're just out there, you're not a preacher, you're just working and being a witness. So let's look what the Lord has to say for you and for me. For he says, starting in verse 22 of Colossians chapter 3, "Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh." He's going to tell us what to do, and then he's going to tell us how to do it, or the attitude that we should have as we go through this process. First of all, a bondservant, a household slave of that day, would be under the master of the household. And you have to realize that about half of the Roman population, it's guesstimated by historians, about half the entire population of Rome, was the Roman world, was slaves. And so they estimate at this time, in the writing of this, that there were 60 million slaves in the Roman world. As a matter of fact, there was a point where they thought about, they just kind of contemplated, those who were in leadership in the Roman government, contemplated making slaves wear a different kind of garment. Say, they all wore red robes or blue robes or whatever the case was, some kind of distinction. But then when they realized how many of them there were, they thought better of that idea, because when the slaves looked around and there's as many of them as there are of those of the owners, that they thought it might lead to a rebellion. A owner of a bondservant had total power over his life. He could kill him with no repercussions from government. He could, you know, it's even one historian, it's remarked that he said, when you move into a new area of work, that you throw out the old household slaves because they're old tools, they're old, worn out. Just throw them out, let them starve to death. And so, in those regards, the master had absolute authority. He could kill the slave if he wanted. He could beat the slave if he wanted. And in these regards, your circumstance is different than that today, unless you are living in some unusual world. Your master does not have the power of life and death over you. He can't beat you and get away with it. He can't, I mean, with labor laws and all kinds of things, there's all kinds of recourse that we have as employees if you're in that field. So that's how it differs. But the principle that is the same is the principle of submission. You see, you have to understand, as I have in my life, that one of the greatest areas of my life for the Lord to deal with is the area of submission. And that is yielding my will to another, the person I work for, my boss that signs my paycheck, so to speak, or the foreman, your supervisor, whoever that is. That you are, as it says here, to obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. Meaning that master that God has put over you in the flesh. You might work at Home Depot. You might be a concrete guy. You might be a framer, a plumber, a secretary, an engineer out at the site, a rad contact, whatever. And whoever the Lord has put right immediately over you, how do you respond to that person? Now, most of the time, in a typical unbeliever's life, and oftentimes in a high percentage of Christians' life, he is my worst enemy. He's a jerk. He's an idiot. He's an imbecile. We tell everybody about it in the break room, only under hushed tones, lest the word get back to him. And the thing that he does not qualify here is he doesn't say, you know what, obey your supervisor, let's use it in the context that it works for you and I, if he's a nice guy, if he's a kind guy, if he gives you a Christmas bonus, if he, has this perspective in which he's this sweet, peachy guy. Now, I don't want to stir anything up, but if you got a great boss, raise your hand. If you got a great supervisor, raise your hand. Okay, praise the Lord. I'm not going to let the rest of you raise your hand, okay? I just want to hear about the great people, okay? We have great bosses. So there are some. I have had both kind bosses and very harsh, cruel guys that I work for. The Lord's call, as long as I'm getting a paycheck from that person, as long as I am working for them, the Lord wants me to yield and to submit to him and obey. It says, oh no, in all things. Now, that would be all things up to the point of sin. I had bosses that would ask me to lie for them. I had bosses that wanted to cheat customers. I had bosses that actually, I ended up leaving one job because of the pressure that my boss constantly put on me to lie, to use inferior products that were actually not in the bid that we had. And I just said, Lord, rescue me. Get me out of this place because it's just too intense. I mean, you're almost in a shouting match or a physical altercation with your boss on a regular basis. And I had to get out of that job. And so in all things, the Lord wants you to obey. Well, it's not right for him to, that's not in my job description to vacuum the hallway. What do you mean it's not in your job description? You, guy asked you to vacuum the hallway, right? You too big for your britches? What's your problem? You see, one of the problems that I realized in my own life as I was going through these struggles is that the Lord's called me to humility and not to pride. Pride wants to raise up and think more highly of myself than I ought to. Humility thinks of myself lowly. Not that I'm down on myself, but you know what? It's not beneath me to vacuum. It's not beneath me to sweep. It's not beneath me to go and, you know, unplug the toilet. Those things are not beneath me. And so I don't have a problem with those things. If a guy is signing my paycheck, as long as I want to work there, I need to be willing to yield and do what he wants me to do. And I find that because I've seen it so much, having worked with a lot of Christians, that there are so many attitudes that are so carnal and fleshly within God's people, brothers and sisters. Therefore, their witness at that workplace to their employer is rather dismal. It's rather dismal. I think everybody here would agree, a Christian that is wanting to honor the Lord in how they're earning a paycheck should be the best employee on the job site. In honesty, in punctuality, that you get there on time, you work hard all day, and you're respectful and obedient to those who are your supervisors. Now, if you do all that, does that mean that you're going to climb the corporate ladder? Not necessarily. I've worked for people that absolutely hate Christians, and I didn't do very well. You know what I mean? I was trying to do all the right stuff, but it just didn't go well. So I was like, wow, Lord, there's something wrong with this picture. I'm trying to do what you want me to do. These people don't like you, so they're kind of taking it out on me. It's like, hey, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. So, we're to obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. Now he tells us with the heart, the attitude that's going on while we're going through the actions of obedience. For he says, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Not with eye service. As men pleasers, you know what eye service is. Eye service is working hard when the boss is around and not working hard when the boss is absent. And everybody sees this. I mean, everybody that's worked a week in their life has seen this. People that when the boss is around, boy, they work themselves up into a sweat. They're quite feverish about their work, and they're trying to get close to the boss, and we have all kinds of terminologies that are not that flattering for a person that acts that way. And which you notice I did not repeat any of them. And so there's this attitude. Now, I think you should work that way, and it's not that you're trying to be the teacher's pet, but you should work that way whether he's there or he's not there. The break should be this long if he's there or he's not there. You see, the thing that you're going to discover as the Lord Jesus transforms your heart and he transforms your mind and renews your mind to think the way he wants you to think is that as you think about the things the Lord wants you to think about in this context, he's going to get to the bottom of this and say, you know what? You're working for the Lord every day when you go to work. And I think this is the hard thing for us to comprehend or to conceive, that you mean I'm just shuffling paperwork, or I have this menial job, you know. Hey, I'm flipping burgers at McDonald's. Well, hey, if you're a Christian, you should be the best burger flipper in the world. You know, 2 all-beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, onions, pickles on a sesame seed bun. I mean, you should be able to do the job there at McDonald's or Taco Bell. It doesn't. This is the thing that I think we have a hard time. If my task is menial, it's okay to do it sloppily. And if my task is all important, I'm the president of the United States. Oh, obviously I should be very diligent because we're going to war, or we're doing this, or I mean, look at the deficit, and I've got to work with Congress. You think of very important things, but understand this, unless you learn to be faithful with little, you will never be entrusted with more. Ask any employer how easy it is to find competent, good help that is punctual. They show up to work on time. They work hard all day when they're there. They don't take extra long breaks. They work hard. They work hard if the boss is there or if the boss is gone. And those kind of people are hard to find. And when you do find them, hey, man, he's already taken care of this. He's faithful with that. Let's give him this responsibility. He's faithful with that. Let's give him that responsibility. And different people have different abilities. Somebody that's faithful here might not do well in a managerial kind of position because they don't have the ability to tell other people what to do. They have the ability to work hard themselves. So there's lots of things you discover about that workplace. And as this unfolds here before us, what kind of employee are you? Do you work hard when the boss is there or not there? Do you understand no matter how menial your task or how important your task is, that ultimately as a child of God, every day I go punch a clock for God? Even when I was a tile setter, I was doing it for the glory of God. Now, I didn't always do it that glorious. I mean, I had some, you know, my work was not perfect, and I had problems here and there. But the desire was to do it as if I'm doing it to the Lord. So not with eye service, not as men pleasers, not as people that are just trying to get the brownie points from the boss because they see him doing something. But you're actually doing it with a sincere heart, and that's what he tells us. But in sincerity of heart, what? Fearing God. I do what I do because I'm a child of God and I fear God. Therefore, I'm working hard. If there's anybody in the scriptures that could have a pity party for themselves, it's the character Joseph. Joseph, 17 years old, his brothers throw him into a pit because they're jealous of him because they see that his father loves them. Jacob, his father, loves him more than he does them. And he gives him a special coat of many colors, or some could translate a coat with sleeves. And they throw him into a pit, and then they sell him into slavery. Then he goes to Egypt, and he's sold literally as a slave, like one of these bondservants, as a household slave in the house of Potiphar. And as Potiphar buys him on the slave blocks, treats him like a piece of meat, he's just a tool at my bidding. He brings him home, and it says, and Joseph prospered. And the man of the household realized that everything he was having was prospering, and it was directly connected to this young man who seemed to know God. Therefore, it says that Potiphar did not know what he had except the bread that he ate every day in front of him. He entrusted his entire household to Joseph, and Joseph prospered as a slave, but he could have been bought off the slave blocks. It said, I'm pouting. My brother sold me into slavery. Wah! You know, if you go around with a chip on your shoulder, acting like somebody owes you something. Nobody owes you a thing. Nobody owes you a thing. So stop acting like they do. If you're bummed out about your wages, did you not agree to take the job at those wages? So now why are you murmuring and complaining because that is your wage? You agreed to it, right? But now 2 months into it, I can't believe they're paying me this. Well, then prayerfully look for another job where you can make money. I've tried, I can't. Well, then shut up and stop whining. Be content with what God has blessed you with. Don't you realize that all of this stuff, as you go through the tests and the fires, and especially in the workplace that we spend so much time, that God is forging and refining a character that would please Him and honor Him and shine bright for Him? Because the darker your circumstance of work and the people you work for, the brighter your light is going to shine. If you let it shine and you don't put a basket over it to hide it and try to hide your Christianity. So with sincerity from the heart, sincerity, fearing God more than you do your employer, fearing God. So with this kind of motivation, then he tells us the kind of energy that we should bring to the workplace. The energy is really defined in verse 23 when he says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men." And so there's an energetic activity that should come rather than us, you know, kind of dragging through the day looking for the least amount of work that we can possibly do, trying to, you know, duck out of it as much as possible. When I had worked for a tile company here in my hometown, strange, you know, when I got out of high school, I didn't want to work so much when I got out. I thought I had accomplished a great task, getting through high school. I thought, that's good for a year of vacation, you know. And I wasn't a Christian, you have to understand. And then my cousin got me a job tearing out a railroad from Jackpot, Nevada, all the way to, it was actually Rogerson to Twin Falls. And it was just one of the most brutal jobs, 4-10s in July and August heat. You're either tossing iron, you know, along a dump truck for 10 hours a day, or you're sorting railroad ties and wearing out a pair of gloves every single week. Or they had me down in a railroad car where I'd put all the rails down in this car and the crane that would lower them down in there. And then the crane operator couldn't even see me except for the tips of my fingers, and the crane had a stick and a hitch in its get-along, and so it would slam the rails against the other side, and I'm down in there, I mean, my teeth are just jarred by the rails that were in there, and it, I mean, every aspect, every place I tried, well, it's got to be better over here, it's got to be better, it just wasn't. And so after that job, I was really on vacation, and my mom, because I was not a Christian, and my mom wasn't really walking with the Lord, she comes home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm up, and she says, "I got you a job. You got to be at this place at 5:30 in the morning." Well, it's 1 o'clock, and I'm drunk. She had just come home from the bar, and she was drunk. I saw this guy in the bar. He's an old friend of mine, and I'm sick and tired of you laying around. Let me pay all the bills. You're going to go to work 5:30 in the morning. You got to be down at this guy's shop. I said, "Well, who is this guy? I don't even know him." And he, "Well, you're going to be a tile helper." I said, "What's that? What do you do when you do that?" And they said, "I don't know, but if you're not down there, you know, mama talks, you better listen up." And so I went down to this guy's shop, and we got up, and I showed up to the two most grumpiest individuals, and they were hungover as well because they were at the bar till one, and they're drinking coffee, and their eyes are bleeding, bloodshot, you know, it's thing. And who are you? "Well, I'm Danya's boy. She sent me down here, and I'm a good boy. I'm here." And we're gonna go. And so we came up to Idaho Falls at about 6. We left from 5:30 at 6, and we drove up here to Idaho Falls, and we tiled the Wendy's over on Northgate for that week. I did not really want to work. And yet, there was an energy that these guys trained me in the next year and a half, that when you worked and you were on the, man, you worked, I mean, you were in a sweat. It was that kind of pace that you were just intense for a year and a half. Well, I wanted to learn the marble trade, and they had a friend down at a place in Las Vegas, and so I went down to work there. And so I come on the job, man, I'm ready. They've been training me for a year and a half. You go crazy, or they'll beat you up or bust a four-foot level over your head. And so they said, okay, you're going to grout these marble tub splashes, you know, showers in this Flamingo Hilton Hotel. And so, man, I'm blazing. I've grouted 10 in one day. And these... After the first day, the second day, all of the helpers that were grouters, they all came into my bathroom. And they looked at me and they said, you got to stop what you're doing. You're making us look bad. I said, well, it's not my intention. I'm the new guy. I don't know what you guys do and how you do it. And I'm for heaven's sakes, I'm from Idaho. I mean, give me a break. They said, no, you don't get it. We see, look at, you're in a sweat. That won't do. It said, we have all agreed that we will grout 2.5 shower splashes a day. We all will do it. We will all do the same amount of work. Therefore, if you do 3, you're making us look bad, and we won't put up with it. And they're all sour. But I said, well, so I don't know what to tell you, fellas, but I only got one speed, and this is it. And so I guess you could talk to the foreman, but then I realized they don't want to do that. They don't want to talk to the foreman. And there's a pressure sometimes to bring a slow-moving body to work today. I wonder, what is the least I could accomplish in 8 hours? I wouldn't want to give them too much. Oh, heavens no. They don't deserve it. They only pay me this much. If they paid me more, they'd get at least twice the speed. And we don't bring our energy with us. He says, whatever, notice this, verse 23, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Let me just ask you, if you're going to show up tomorrow morning at work and Jesus is there, how's that going to kind of change your perspective and your attitude in the office? I mean, if you're the whiny, grumpy, complaining type, all of a sudden it's amazing how positive you've become. Jesus is there. Oh, Lord, it's a great day. It's 10 below. It's cold. The Lord's here. It's a great day. Let's get to work. Well, let's get right on top of it. Let's get as much done as we can. Because you see, the Lord's there. It's amazing what the concept of Jesus being with you in every aspect of life, how that affects your decisions. Is it not? If you just think right now, hey, if the Lord is with me right now, would I be in this place? Would I be doing this? Well, he is with you. He is with you. He's invisible. You can't see him, but he's with you. I think that's why he was giving the disciples a sample that he was with them after the resurrection. You know, for 40 days, he revealed himself to his disciples. Like, they're behind locked doors, and he'd just show up, hello. They're like freaked out. He's like, because he always had to say, peace, it's okay, don't be afraid. I mean, they're freaked out. By the end of the 40 days, you know that, would you stop, please? You know, just this boom, 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 damn, boom. He's there, he's not there, he's there, he's there, he's not there. He's everywhere. Is he here? I mean, it's this, you know, thing back and forth. But I think he was giving the apostles and all this, I'm with you always. I know you may not see me, but I am with you always. And so the energy is a dynamic that also, sincerity of heart, but also an energy as it is to the Lord and not to men. I know you have a boss. He may not be a good boss. He may not be a kind boss. He may not care 2 cents for your life, but the Lord does, and he's given you this opportunity. Verse 24, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. He says, knowing that you... Do you know this? Do you have this knowledge? Do you have this information written on your heart and mind, knowing that one day you're going to receive your reward from the Lord as an inheritance, even if you never receive it from your boss? The Lord sees your heart. He sees the abuse. He sees the neglect, or he sees the harshness. The Lord sees it. As a matter of fact, when Jacob went to work for his nemesis, if you will, that was his father-in-law, a guy by the name of Laban. Jacob was the schemer, man. He could get the best of anybody. He was a conniver. He was a deceiver. And yet he met his match in Laban. He discovered that when he worked for 7 years to get the love of his wife, Rachel, and he gave him a daughter. He went into her. It's nighttime. He wakes up in the morning, and it's Leah, the sister. Now, we don't know how bad this. Rachel was absolutely stunning, striking, just drop-dead gorgeous. But Leah, the only description it has of Leah is she had weak eyes. Leah was not cute, guys. He woke up next to, he was expecting, you know, Miss Israel, and he woke up to weak eyes. Leah's name literally means heifer. Yep. So if he said, "Hey, little heifer," it's not out of turn. That's what it means. And Laban deceived him, but he also deceived him. Jacob says he changed his wages 10 different times. Every time Jacob began to prosper with the speckled sheep, he would change the wages and say, "No, I get the speckled sheep from now on." And then he'd start having the black sheep or whatever the different, you know, spots and speckled. He changed his wages 10 times, but God watched over him and blessed him. Every time this Laban tried to get the best of him and change his wages, God was watching out for him. You see, if your faith is an operation and you believe in Jesus that he's going to take your soul to heaven, can't you trust him that he knows what he's doing in your workplace? Can't you trust him? I'm trusting him for heaven. I'm going to heaven one day. I trust him that my sins are forgiven, but I can't trust him with this rude boss I got, you know, I go to work for. And pray that the Lord will give you an opportunity to get out of that job if it's that bad. But if you can't find a job, I would never recommend to somebody to quit a job before they got another one. It's just not too wise from my perspective, but if that's the way it works out, if you get fired because you're a Christian or you get fired for whatever reason, I just look at it as an opportunity. There's no reason to be mad at that person. I've been fired and I just said, "Hey, the Lord's just opened up all kinds of doors because he just closed that when I'm fired." And so I guess God's got something else for me. But my reward is going to be from the Lord, for you serve the Lord. But verse 25, but he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. There is a reward that we will get from the Lord, but if you have done wrong. Now, this is something that you must comprehend as a Christian. There are two different experiences. One is that we are saved by God's grace, and we're going to heaven completely by faith in Jesus Christ. As we walk with the Lord by faith, after we're saved, we will be judged at the Bema Seat of Christ, or the Judgment Seat of Christ, the Reward Seat of Christ. In 2 Corinthians 5:10, it tells us this, and we will either receive rewards or lose rewards based upon our behavior, whether it's good or it's bad. It has nothing to do with your salvation. It has nothing to do with your standing. It has to do with your rewards, what you are receiving through your obedience to the Lord or your disobedience to the Lord, the loss of reward. I think this is so vital, and I find that so few people care about that. They go, "Well, who cares? I'll be saved." I know you're saved. I'm saved. But I can't help but thinking, in that day when you see the rewards that are given for obedience and the loss of rewards for disobedience, I can't help but think you'll care then. I can't help but think you'll care then. Like, you know what? Why didn't I just obey the Lord in these things? Why didn't I just do what he showed me to do? Why didn't I just have that attitude? Why didn't I? Because look at the reward. You see, one of the motivations in our life as Christians is that I'm not going to get all my reward here. Okay? And as humans, you and me, we're always looking for all of our reward here. We're always looking for it here. And as I serve the Lord, you know, there's a lot of things because I serve the Lord that maybe I won't experience in this life. But the motivation factor is there is a world to come. And I'm banking on that. And I know that I will either receive rewards or lose rewards based on that good behavior, that bad behavior, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. And so, if you go through life, you say, "I'm saved, I work for a guy, I hate it there. I'm a stinky employee. I got a rotten attitude. I hate it. I hate them. I tolerate it. I need a paycheck. I can't seem to find another job. And you go through it with that attitude. Well, okay. One day you'll stand before the Lord. You'll have a saved soul. And you're going to spend eternity with Jesus because he died on the cross for your sins. But the reward that would have come through being an obedient servant in that role will not be yours. It'll be somebody else's, as they are either obedient or disobedient to the Lord in those things. Now a word, this seems a little imbalanced to us, but understand this was revolutionary in this day, in verse 1 of chapter 4, one verse to the masters. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. You who now are employers, you don't have the power of life and death over your employees, but sometimes the way you act, you would think you do. In Ephesians, Paul the Apostle tells the masters, give up threatening. Stop threatening your employees. Now, there's nothing wrong with promising them, next time you're late, you're done. That's fine. But threatening them constantly. I'm going to get somebody else to do it. You can't do it. And you're just constant. That's how some bosses, I had one boss that's the way he motivated. But his employee turnover was very high. People could only handle it for about a year, and then they were out because they couldn't take that kind of verbal abuse all the time. So he says, masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair. As an employer, do you look at what you're paying your staff? Is it just? Is it fair? You know, the thing is that as a Christian, as a owner of a company, as an owner of a company, the motivation for all of the secular world is just the profit line. But when you become a Christian, it broadens now. No, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. That's what you're in business for, right? But now can you want to have a good profit, but also care about your employees? Do you care if, the guy's wife's sick? If you care if his kids have been in the hospital for a week? Do you ask them? Do you treat your employees just like they're tools? They're just inanimate objects. Do you care? As a Christian, I'll be praying for your wife. She agrees. As a Christian, the cool thing about being a Christian and having the authority of owning a business or being in a place where you can either give raises or benefits or be kind to your employees, also that they know you're a Christian because you have no pressure from them. You don't want to cram things down their throat. But you can say, hey, I'll be praying for your wife. I'll be praying for your son. What's his name? And that you look and say, this is just and fair. God's blessed me financially, and I think it's fair to maybe bump the guys up and give them a raise or give them the benefits if it's just and fair, if it's in your power to do so. I find that when you really want to, that there are employers that have discovered how to keep their staff. And then there are those who just run them through like a mill shop because they just, hey, we just want the work done, and this is the, and maybe the job, because of the low rate of pay, they've got to go somewhere else if they want to really feed a family. But I think it would be cool to be a witness in the workplace, and that even if a guy stomps off the job and goes to work somewhere else for a year, and he goes and bounces around a couple of times, and he comes back to your shop and says, I could make more money down the street, but I've never worked for somebody as kind as you, or that cares about me, that actually walks in love. They wouldn't use those terms. Those are more defined kind of in Christian things, but they say, I want to work here. I want to work for you. You're respectful. We get a lot done because you are a hard worker, and you demonstrate it, but you're just, you're fair. I appreciate that about you. You're not always threatening us and pressuring us in that way, but you lead by example. The people we're reading about in this passage, they had no options. You in this room, the sky's the limit. It's America. You can go down the street. You can move across the country. You can do anything that you want. As long as you can feed yourself, I guess. The last thing that the Lord said to Paul, two masters, was he said, knowing that you have a master in heaven. There's something a little bit heady about having authority. Having a measure of some myself, it is possible to forget that there is a God in heaven that is watching you as the leader and how you're treating the sheep that he's put under you as a flock. As employees and employers, Christianity, if it doesn't affect us first in our marriage, second in our family, third in the workplace where we spend so much time, what are we doing in our walk with the Lord? What are we doing? You see, sometimes we compartmentalize our Christianity. We say, Lord, I'm going to be obedient in this section, but this section over here, I just kind of like to be a twerp. You know what I mean? And I'm just going to, I like this over here, and I like to act this way, and everybody knows it. You know, last year, one of the sweet brothers in the Lord at our fellowship, just a real neat guy, came to me and said, you know, the Lord's really just doing some work in my heart. He has some authority in the union that he's involved with. And he's the spokesman or the representative for his union in his sector where he works. And some people began to tell him, you know, well, we know about you because of your, you know, this and that, and how I don't remember the term you'd use, but kind of very, very strong or dominating or boisterous. And as he heard everybody that he dealt with in the union circle, what they thought of him as a Christian, he was blown away, but more than blown away, he was absolutely convicted to the core of his being. He just said, I had no idea that everybody I work with look at me this way. And I'm wanting to shine for Jesus, and this is what they see. And I think, he's just sharing his heart. It just brought him to his knees, and he just got on his face and he just asked the Lord to help him and to be transformed and continue in the leadership role that he had, but now seasoned with the grace of Jesus Christ, that he might be a witness. That yes, they might know that he's a great leader, but that there's truth and honesty and actually respect and kindness as he deals with other people, and that Jesus was shining through. Whether employee or employer, may the Lord live his life through us. Tomorrow morning, you're going to go to work. I pray that you would do it in obedience to the person in authority over you, not with eye service, whether they're there or they're not. You're working hard, and you'll bring energy with you. And you'll do it because there's the fear of the Lord that he's watching. Let's pray.